This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe, and I'm Sue Bird. We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show. A Touch More.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Hello, welcome to the Airbuds Podcast. Podcasts are internet radio programs. This is one about professional basketball in America. My name, Jamel Johnson.
Hello, I'm Peter.
My name, Mike Benner.
Yo, happy basketball, gentlemen.
Happy basketball.
Whoopie homdy.
Has it been happy basketball this week? I feel like we've made real progress towards basketball coming back.
It's been half happy. I'm happy that they're going to be playing the NBA AAU tournament. I'm happy that I'm going to get to watch that, but I'm sick of hearing about Bradley goddamn Beal going to fucking Brooklyn for nothing. They're
all
just
right.
Like,
all
oh,
right. Well, let's we're jumping ahead here.
Man. Yeah, we'll get into that, but let's get some business.
Jumping ahead.
Let's get some business.
We got intros. We got
out of the way. Okay, fine. Look, if you go to Apple Podcasts and you leave us a 5-star review and write something, we will read whatever you write on the air. A lot of you idiots are just clicking that 5 stars and not writing anything, and then therefore not forcing Peter to say something racist onto a podcast.
Yeah, the only reviews I would love to read a review where I could just say, like, Jamel's great and the white guys are fine. Those are all the other ones. Okay. Why do I have to read the racist ones?
Okay, so this, again, I feel like might be Jamel. We got a 5-star review.
I don't read these. I don't write these.
Headline, Yeet Mesquite. 5 stars. Okay. The author of the review, I hate both of you.
I see how you could think this was me, but this is not me.
Here's the body of the review. Drew Holiday would put Michael Jordan in the torture chamber.
Drew Holiday looking like Roger Federer. Talk about do that, man. Nah.
That is an excellent 5-star review. Thank you.
That's a good one.
Thank you. I hate both of you for leaving that. And if you want to support us, go to patreon.com/airbudspod for a very small amount of money. You get at this point like multiple bonus contents a week, access to the Slack, which is very fun. I feel like Tim, we should just add you to the Slack if you're interested.
Oh man, yes.
I feel like any multiple returning guest just gets added to the Slack.
We need to start adding some channels. I think it's time to get a fit group, and then we need to get a group of people who would destroy Michael Jordan. That should be another channel.
Yeah.
And then we'll do like maybe favorite NBA alcoholics.
Yeah. And then there's also just like the wholesome channel we should have. Like people, it's very nice in there sometimes. Like it's a
Shout
very supportive community. Yeah.
Shouts out to our Slack grads. A lot of Slack grads. People giving us our graduation picks.
Yeah, we got a lot of quarantine graduation picks going on in there. We love it. Anyways, Airbuds. Patreon.com/AirbudsPod. Let's get into our guest. He is a returning champion. You know him from, I don't know, Screen and Pod. He is one of the funniest people we've ever had on our show. Please welcome Tim Baltz. That's a lot of pressure.
Hey, thanks for having me. You know, I've lost it all during quarantine, so I'm just glad to throw a rusty bone your guys' way.
Oh, man, dude, we'll take it. We'll take anything.
We love bones.
Honestly, I've been talking to so many people. There have been a lot of like Last Dance NBA fans that at this point have kind of tuned me out. And my fiance's brother has been like, are you done with your podcast circuit yet? And I'm like, I'm like, you tuned me out. What do you care? I went at him hard.
Make sure he downloads the pod.
I made him tap out over text where he'd be like, yeah, like, you know, you're going back and forth like long paragraphs, and then I'll get like one sentence from him where he's like, yeah, I agree with that. Like, all right, you're done.
It is very difficult to like kind of like end a conversation over text. It's hard to be like, well, I gotta go.
Yeah. Like, especially when one person's like going into basketball reference, like screenshots. Which I told you guys before we started.
Speaking of the podcast circuit, we got bumped last week for Dunktown.
I'm so sorry.
Damn.
I'm sorry.
Hey, you know what? That's our vibe. That's really like.
Yeah. I didn't mean to start beef. I'm not trying to start beef.
You also made the right decision.
No,
yeah.
They literally just they asked like a few days before, and I just, you know, I've lost all track of space and time. So they like. One person either sent a date and a time, and you sent a day and a time, and I was like, "Wow,
yeah,
Sunday, yeah." Sunday.
I only mentioned it because I just want to see if they actually listen to our show.
Dates, days, and time are all pretty much a wash at this point, so no one can really be held to account.
Yeah, how are you guys doing in quarantine?
I've lost all track of day, dates, and times. Yeah.
Yeah, just here.
I bought a winter jacket last week.
What?
I bought a wool coat.
Why?
I bought a walk recently. That was nice.
Oh, that's good.
All right.
Immediately stained it and burnt it, but that doesn't seem like to be like the worst thing in the world.
No, that's what walks. That's what you do with walks.
Your driveway.
Yeah, walks get fucking discolored immediately.
I didn't know. Oh. I went out to 99 Ranch out in like Alhambra. Only place I could find a good walk.
Oh shit!
Is that like the 99-cent store, but like more rustic?
It's like Korean or generally Asian, like superstore. Like
I think it's Chinese owned, and it is Vons, like a place basically. To get. Yeah, it's like it's a great like Asian market that also has like. Walks or like if you want like a sticky rice cooker, you can go there.
Ooh.
Yeah,
although just found out you can make sticky rice in your microwave super easy. Been going through that night market cookbook last week.
Oh,
and now I have to go on a diet because I've eaten nothing but that for like the last week.
Oh bro, I went back to back sticky rices last week, and here I am. I'm living to tell the tale.
Congratulations, Tim. Have you been cooking in quarantine? I feel like we all have been.
Yeah, a lot. Lily, my fiance, and I, like we trade off cooking. It's pretty much like whoever needs a greater sense of control in life to manage quarantine anxiety is like,
it's not like giving a gift to the other person to relax. It's more like I need this for me right
now. Yeah, and our kitchen isn't big enough to have us both kind of operating and doing different things. Like we can, but we kind of have to talk about it, and that conversation just gets so tiresome that someone's like, "I'm taking the lead," and I'm like, "Okay, I'll like peel these sweet potatoes and then just get the fuck out of the kitchen."
you know, that is like so interesting. Like I hadn't thought about that. Like I feel like I have, like I've always loved to cook, but it has been like definitely like, oh no, I'll cook tonight, honey. Because I think in the back of my mind, I'm like, I need a task. I need to not talk to you. I need to be in a room for 90 minutes making something so I feel like I have accomplished
That's what it is. That's what it is. Yeah. Let me accomplish one thing today, you know?
Yeah.
Because like I'm trying not to put too much like burden on myself, you know, creatively. If I had this much time off normally, I think I'd be like, I need to accomplish X, Y, Z. If I can do one thing, even if it's like reading 50 pages of the book that I'm on or whatever, like that needs to be enough because the low days get pretty low. And I'm not trying to have too many high days to make medium days feel bad. I want medium days to feel like I'm a fucking rock star. Here we go. I'm on a streak.
I think I would like.
Hold on, wait. Yeah. Hold on. What constitutes medium? Is it like putting on jeans?
Yeah.
Is that medium for you guys?
Yeah.
That's big time for me.
For me, it's yeah. If I leave sweatpants for something, shorts, whatever. Like if I go for a walk, if I work out a little, if I read something or just like, you know, write for whatever, for no reason or whatever. If I do all four of those things, like and I eat three meals a day, that's a medium day, you know? Nothing to write home about, but
I gotta say though, I've always been kind of a jeans guy. Like my entire life, even when I was like skateboarding as like a teen in the humid Philadelphia summers, like I wore jeans. I've always been a like pants guy. I've kind of pivoted to a shorts guy in quarantine. I've ordered,
welcome, Michael.
And not even just a shorts guy. I've purposely ordered like shorty short, like thigh bearing shorts that I like, that I intend to wear around other people.
Whoa,
that's just like the first time you're not living in like Allen Iverson 2002. It just took like 18 years for you to kind of like break through. I'm proud of you, man.
But yeah, I have like pastel colored Nike shorts that like come up to my mid thigh that like you guys will see me in.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Bro, when are we going to do it? We should do an auction. We should do a dating. Let's do an auction on all three of us where we all wear
we first
got to
take videos of all of our.
We know how that will end.
We owe the world feet videos, right?
No, we don't.
No.
Benner is the only one asking us to pull our feet out. And nobody else.
It's literally just a bit for our group text. It's not for the world.
Oh, I confused. I thought it was in the Slack. My bad.
Yeah, because he never LOLs at the end of this fucking shit. You think he's serious? He's not. He can't be serious.
Mike is always saying something in our group text, like, guys, if we get 100 subscribers, like, let's take videos of our feet, like, of us, like, taking our shoes off and put them on.
Yeah, every other day, he's like, hey, time to post those feet, gang.
Well, look, I don't know if it's a real thing, but I came up with unchewing, which is, like, unboxing, but for, like, feet.
For human feet? That's not a, you didn't invent that.
I don't know. Tim, that would be a hit with foot fetishists, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah, if it doesn't exist already, it has to exist.
It has
to. But if not,
exist.
I should be a millionaire.
I'm not trying to kink shame anybody, but foot fetish has got to be the funniest thing to me. It's just the funniest.
See, I'm like, the same because like feet, like literally to me are the grossest thing, and so then I joke about it constantly because like I just don't understand it. It's like
the Rex Ryan. It was Rex Ryan, right? Who.
Yeah.
Like outed himself as that. I also think there's the highest degree of like people being like, well, this is normal. Everyone knows this. Don't you agree? And everyone's like, nope. And they're like, oh, I read the room wrong. You're like, no, you didn't. You're in too big of a community of foot fetishists and you assume that that's the world, which is fine. It's fine. It's fine.
I mean, that's like the real liberal bubble, I think. The foot fetish community. And their leader is Quentin Tarantino, who is just out there trying to get everyone into feet. Anyways, this is a podcast about basketball. What the fuck are we talking about?
I gotta talk about this because I just feel bad that I'm always showing Lily my phone and being like, look at this. But
he just showed us his phone. It's a bunch of feet.
Yeah, no. It was this Quentin Tarantino meme, and someone was like, you know, this guy's respecting 6 feet, and it's a picture of him with a foot next to his face. It broke me for like an hour.
Twitter is great because everyone is like the funniest person in the world for one moment.
That is true.
Yeah.
It is true.
Everyone gets a shot at being the funniest person in America or the world.
Yeah. I like to play the different roles every day. Like my weekly, you know how, you know what I mean? Like old people have that, like, their like week of pills, mm-hmm. that weekday pill, but it's like Twitter styles for me.
Ooh, nice. You know?
Like Monday, I'm like woke boy. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
Then Tuesday, it gets a little more male feminist. Then Wednesday, I do a 360. I go Hotep mode.
Some would say that like that is just woke boy and Hotep mode are very similar.
Oh, yeah. They're very similar, but they will scrap. No, there's a way to cross those paths the wrong way for sure.
Yeah.
Don't mention like you know, the wrong kind of potato salad. You know what I'm saying? And the wrong thread. You feel me?
Yeah, don't get too horny for potato salad on Maine on a Monday.
You know what me and Brandon were talking about? You know what's wild is like the main difference between white Twitter and black Twitter is like how they deal with horniness. Y'all ever notice that? Like black Twitter's like, yo, I need some head right now. And then white Twitter's like, The civil rights stats in Massachusetts are a joke.
Yeah, I think the ultimate example of white horniness being like performative wokeness is that dude from The Orange is the New Black. Did you guys ever... What's that guy's name? Shit.
Which dude?
Orange Blackman?
Jason
the guy Gaze? The guy that plays the prison guard.
Oh, like Paulo Schreiber?
Paulo Schreiber is performatively woke for horniness sake on Twitter. And it is hilarious. Yeah.
That adds up. And he played like a crazy serial killer guy on SVU. Yeah, he's racking it up.
Anyways, this is very niche.
He's getting it both ways.
All right, once again, this is a podcast about basketball. Tim,
I feel like we have to let Tim just like let out his stats for The Last Dance, or he's gonna like explode.
I know, that's what I was. Yeah, time. That's exactly what I was gonna say. Tim, you're a Chicago native. You obviously love the Bulls, love Michael Jordan. You have a lot of thoughts. Let's just give you the floor for, I don't know, 42 minutes to say anything you want.
Well,
sounds good.
So I obviously, like, I grew up with these teams. So a huge part of rewatching this was like, you know, nostalgia, remembering where I was, you know, during the triple overtime Suns finals game, you know, reliving some of Jordan's, the guy's layup package was ridiculous and doesn't get enough credit. There's a lot of stuff like that's that true. Where I'm like, oh, right. The feeling that we had, like the overwhelming sense of dominance, has never been paralleled. The only thing that I can parallel that dominance to is Rafael Nadal at the French Open. That's the only thing since Jordan has left sports that we think, well, it's a done deal. That's it. There's nothing else. Not Tom Brady, not Patriots. Like everyone has proven that they can lose on the big stage, except maybe Nadal at the French.
I would say also Tiger for like 18 months.
Good point.
And golf, like, even though like...
You're going to give him 18 months. That's long. Like years of dubs.
Yeah, but like golf is also like insane to be like that dominant. And like, I feel like that 18 month run that Tiger had, even though he lost some like in the previous years prior, it was like a dominance level of like, you just turned on the TV and was like surprised if they weren't winning.
But like golf is closer to darts or bocce ball than it is to basketball. Like, it's not a true athletic pursuit in the same way.
That's a big time shot. We're going right at our Republican base. We're going right at our hey, all of our Barstool listeners, the thoughts and views you just heard are Mike Benner's.
Hey,
and Mike Benner's alone.
Hey, fucking Presidente, why don't you go fucking suck yourself off in hell? We hate you. Go away. Golf is not a sport. I said it.
Well,
okay. I'm gonna just stand up for golf real fast. This Jewish Bernie bro is going to just ride for golf real fast and say, not that bad and pretty hard to do.
Are you just thinking about Bagger Vance? Are you not thinking about real golf? Are you thinking about the movie Legend of Bagger Vance?
I would, I,
I'm not talking to you, Peter.
Peter, remember like the 6 months where like you would take me to the Los Feliz Nine and like get me high, and we would like drink beers, and like
what a time to be alive.
I was as good as you, like at golf.
That's a very interesting way to remember it. I think that the important part of that story is also I got you drunk and high, so maybe you thought you were.
It's true. It's true.
That is valid.
But there was a period where like you took me golfing a bunch at the municipal golf course, and you would be like, "Wow, you're actually like a natural at this." Like,
you are. You were great.
Yeah. That's why I don't consider golf a sport.
Because you're good at it? What if it was your destiny, you fucking idiot?
First of all, it was a par three, so let's just get that out of the way. So it's like basically putt-putt. It's like closer to putt-putt than it is to real golf. But you were great.
Whatever. Golf is closer to bocce ball than it is to basketball.
All right, we were talking. Tim was like, we were giving Tim the floor for 45 minutes. Come what happened on. To that?
So Rafael Nadal is the only real comp to Jordan, is your point.
In terms of dominance, that sense of like, it's inevitable, they're going to crush you. We haven't felt that in basketball at the very least, if we just limit it to that. I think that was the big picture, like 10,000 feet. That's watching all the episodes. That's the thing that I was like, oh, I forgot that feeling. Because we just haven't really had that feeling since. I mean, side note, I'm a massive Nadal fan. He's one of my favorite top three athletes.
But the other two?
Over Federer.
The other two, Alonzo Mourning, and probably Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen was probably my first favorite basketball player. And then Jordan would be, I mean, you know, I'd say top four, just put Jordan in there because obviously everyone loved Jordan. And Mark Grace would fill out my top five, probably. You know,
Alonzo Mourning is a great choice. And I think, and as a side note, we'll get back to the last stand thoughts. I think he is entirely overlooked by A, for how good he fucking was, and B, like, he redefined big men in the NBA a little bit before Shaq, right?
Yeah, and a big reason that he did, well, first of all, he was ranked number one at his position as a high school player all 4 years, which was the first time that ever happened, obviously in the mid to late 80s. Then he chooses Georgetown. He could have gone anywhere. Obviously, he's the number one player in the country. He could have gone anywhere. He chooses Georgetown, and Mutombo is already there. So he has to slide from the five to the four at a time where that wasn't really something you didn't have to make that concession. He could have gone anywhere. And he picks Georgetown, and a lot of that has to do with his backstory, him growing up, which is wild. Like, he chooses – Virginia had this weird law where the child, during a divorce custody battle, could actually choose where they went, not the parent. And he elected at 11 years old to put himself into foster care instead of going with either parent, because he was like, I know that I have a future. Those are both going to be unstable environments. I'm going to go with this woman who's a foster mother in our community, who had like 20 foster kids. And he, at 11, he had the maturity and awareness to do that.
That's fucking wild.
Yeah.
What is Alonzo Mourning up to right now?
He runs a fucking kicking charity organization. That does a ton of work, that created a high school that has like 95% like college placement rate or something crazy like that.
That's so fucking cool. He's
incredible.
He's incredible. I love him so much.
But I think that he ends up, you know, naturally becoming like not a 3-point shooting stretch five, although now he would be, obviously, like he had the range then. He just didn't, the game didn't call for it. But because of playing under Mutombo, that's my point, he was able to come into the NBA with like more of a shooter's touch. And he like, that was another thing, some podcast we were talking about, it was the Wilbon low post one or something like that, where he's talking about Jordan having a beef against Mourning. And because Wilbon was writing a story about Mourning, but Mourning like came out of the gates like crushing it. He obviously wasn't going to win Rookie of the Year because Shaq was so good and the hype was so real and he met the hype. But like, he had a case for a little while during that season to be co Rookie of the Year.
Like 18 years of like wonderful living in Miami.
I bet. Oh. I can't.
It also was wild to me during The Last Dance to just really kind of be 25, 30 years away from 90s basketball and truly kind of look back at how much the three-pointer was devalued. Like, it's one thing to think about it, you know, just it's kind of changed over the last 5 years. But it was just so stark at how many aggressive, like 12 to 18 footers were taken with, like, such, like, confidence and bravado and then, like, celebration from, like, Bob Costas. Like, everyone. I was like, wow, look at that mid-range.
Yep.
Incredible.
And those would be, like, the huge turning points of the game, too, you know?
Yeah.
They'll, like, highlight it, and they'll be like, and then it came down to Wennington's 17-footer. Oh, it did. Oh, no. Like, I guess. Oh, shit. No wonder it felt like a roll of the dice. Well,
it is funny to like think like we like without examining anything, you think of like Larry Bird as like a sharpshooter, like 3-point threat. Like he averaged like 1.5 3-point attempts in his career. Like he like, yeah,
it was they weren't thinking smart, man.
No,
they were working harder, not smarter.
Well, also, it seemed like you only like made a three if you were like trying to like get desperate at the end of the game or like someone pissed you off and you wanted to just like shoot a three to like tell them to go fuck themselves.
But it was learned behavior too, because high school and college didn't have a 3-point line. So mentally they just didn't have the imagination to even think that way, because they'd grown up, coaches had like, it's all they'd ever known. And these players, like it was new to them too. But as kids, they grew up being like, well, you'd never play that way. So,
right.
Yeah.
If you shot more than like 3 3-pointers in a game, it's because you weren't hungover and the rim wasn't moving. Like that's how it was in the 80s.
Wait, let me get to some of these stats now, because this is
okay. Yeah, let's get into it.
So, honestly, the first like stat hole that I went down was Jordan's sophomore year, that second season with the Bulls. So 85-86, the one where he injures his foot and he only plays 18 games. They focused on it way more than how it was covered in Chicago media and historically how it's been looked at. I didn't realize he had a 14-minute time restriction. That shocked me, because he still averaged like 22 points a game that year or something like that. And then the year after that is the year where he goes nuts and he averages 37.1 points per game, which is absurd. And then the year after that, he averages 35.3, something like that. So
All right.
Yeah.
Hold on, Benner. Now, Benner, you tell Tim why LeBron is better than Mike and everything he's saying sucks.
No, we already covered this on a podcast. We
okay.
We went last week, Tim, like stat for stat line, career point wise. And I think Peter and I both landed LeBron is better. Jamel obviously feels differently. But yeah,
well, go on. We can even it out, because I think, no, it's not even close. Because if you put MJ in this era, he's got competition and sports science. If you take LeBron down an era, he doesn't have sports science. So you actually can't predict. It's easier to predict what MJ would do and upgrade his stats. You take LeBron back, I think you kind of have to downgrade his stats. If you have less sports science,
I would also say, though, like the level of competition and though has to also be factored into that sliding scale, too. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. And honestly, I would never try to hijack any podcast with a LeBron Jordan debate, because it's endless and it's been covered.
What else
too
we got to talk
about? Yeah, we got nothing else. But here's my thing. LeBron James, he's 6'10", 300 pounds. If you move him back to the 80s.
And the fastest guy on the floor.
And the fastest person. Like, he's just, like, he's a freak athlete that, like.
Would he have been?
I think that is one clear thing that he has over Jordan is size, strength, speed.
Yeah, in a vacuum, in absolute zero conditions. This is not.
I mean,
he would never do that. LeBron's childhood. He would not be groomed in earlier environments to become the player that he is if you put him back in that era. He wouldn't. Also, like, if let's say competition is actually measurable.
Are you just saying like he technology of the 80s wouldn't have been as good?
He grew up semi-homeless in the 90s. Like, I don't understand, like, what do you mean?
He grew up with AAU club ball. At what age do people say LeBron is the anointed one? 13? 14?
14, yeah, about 14 or 15.
14, 15 officially, but before then, people are like, yo, get this guy in this high school and make sure that he's covered with these things. Like, that's not going to happen prior to that. you know.
But if you put him in the 80s, he would have just somebody would have found him, and he would have played ball at, you know, Christian Polytechnical. You know,
yeah,
and then went to fucking, you know,
I think there's space university. There's a lot of variables. Like, you can't predict it. But that's why it's harder to take current era players and put them backwards, because there's variables that are immeasurable, unmeasurable.
I mean, I think you could argue it's safe to say that Jordan had, like, without a doubt, the most will and work ethic.
Yeah.
Of maybe anyone ever, but also, like, you can't, like, also diminish LeBron's, like, physical gifts as probably just like the most gifts ever.
So here's my question, because I don't disagree with you, but I also think that Jordan has a gift that does trump LeBron's many plethora of gifts.
A gambling addiction.
Yeah. Is it bending cards?
No, it's what you just said. It's competition. It's work ethic. It's like the dedication to win.
The will. He would have killed. He would have strangled Paul Pierce at midcourt.
Yeah. Paul Pierce would have been like, who would Paul Pierce have been a comp for? Jordan.
He would have fully shit his pants all the way down to the ground.
Yeah. Michael Jordan would have taken that wheelchair and threw him down a hill like Mac and me. Like,
if you had one game between MJ and LeBron, right? Their teams are playing each other. The teams are pretty evenly matched. One game. Who are you? And your life is on the line. Who are you betting on?
LeBron.
You're nuts. You're fucking
Miguel,
nuts.
Give me Miguel
no
Jordan.
No way, no way.
My life is on the line. LeBron. I want the guy who's going to give Bron the death stare. I want the guy who's going to stare LeBron down at the free throw line.
LeBron,
how about this?
Pick
what
LeBron.
Age is LeBron?
Pick peak Mike. Pick peak LeBron. LeBron wouldn't pick LeBron with his own life on the line. He wouldn't do it. He would pass to Michael.
He is a passer.
He's a passer.
I personally don't care if I live or die, so I'm going with LeBron.
You just want to die at this game?
If I die in like at when the horn blows at the end of the fourth quarter in a game between Michael Jordan and LeBron, that's the perfect time to go.
It gets no better.
At the horn.
I will die. I don't care who wins that game. It's the peak of my life.
Well, but also in this scenario, do they have the exact same talent around them, or is it like?
I think you'd have to say that their teams. Well, again, that's why it's impossible and endless to argue this stuff, because
you switch them up. You switch up the role players. LeBron has Bill Winnington. Jordan gets Zydrunas. Okay, you know, we start working that way. Jordan gets Booby Gibson. LeBron gets fucking BJ Armstrong.
Who gets Horace Grant?
They split him in half.
Well, yeah. Perfect. Well, you give LeBron
like
Harvey.
Like in the Bible.
Give LeBron Harvey Grant.
They should each get one of the Grant siblings. Jeremy Grant and what's the other
Jerian
Grant in the league right now?
Jerian?
Brian Grant?
No, Jerian.
Yeah. Oh, Jerian, yeah.
Yeah,
they each get one of those. It's a coin flip.
And then they both have to bring back Grantland.
Well, here, why I think Will is an important factor and a deciding factor is, like, no matter what you can say about like this era's style of play versus that era's style of play, there are great people, great players, and great teams in all those eras, right? So how is this player relative to their own era? Jordan erased the greatness of all these Hall of Fame players. LeBron has let some of them win titles.
Yeah, but
so he didn't.
Okay,
so the
well,
Mavs
a,
didn't
I
win.
Think
so the Spurs
we have to
win plus
that
almost win.
Competition level is better now.
I don't think that you can say competition level is better without saying that sports science is better, without saying that LeBron has benefited so much from sports science and therefore has an unfair advantage when you're comparing.
Fine,
head
we
to
can
head
say
on
that. It's still like Michael Jordan had maybe three other like legitimate contenders. LeBron has to deal with like eight contenders.
No. You think that because Jordan erased their legacies. Jordan destroyed them so thoroughly that you're like, Ewing wasn't shit. Barkley wasn't shit.
Thank you, Tim.
Stockton and Malone weren't shit. Peyton and Kemp weren't shit. All these other Eastern Conference teams weren't shit. The East that he played against was fucking light years better than LeBron's East. Eight in a row. Yeah. Fucking against crap teams. Against who? The Pacers? The Pacers once took him to the distance.
Fire these niggas
That's
up, Tim.
That's it, man. No one else. He got challenged in the East twice. twice. He was so scared of playing Kobe, he could have beaten the Celtics himself in 2010. And he fucking took a shit before facing Kobe and getting destroyed in the finals because he knew his team couldn't beat the Lakers. No, no.
Now is the time for us to reveal our special guest, Tim's brother-in-law, everyone.
No, That here's the other thing. People were like, oh, the expansion teams. Okay, well, LeBron starts his career with an influx of high school students, like high school players that don't have the benefit of any college formation. Now he's in a one-and-done era. Jordan, yes, he has those expansion teams, but he's getting 3-4 year college players that are coming to the league ready without European players that also go bust. That's the second chapter of LeBron's career. So you want to talk about, like, where the league is at, whether it's soft or not. Don't even get me started on defensive rules. Don't get me started. LeBron.
He didn't even say defensive rules. He's been roasting you niggas for 15 minutes. Close. He didn't even say you can't touch.
You can't touch him. He can lower his shoulder into everybody. They changed the rules for Shaq. They didn't change the rules for LeBron. That's not, no.
But you're telling me that LeBron at 6'10", 300 pounds with different defensive rules wouldn't be fucking killing it?
But he wouldn't be that big because he wouldn't be lifting weights like that.
What?
Because nobody did. Jordan, no sports science.
Jordan didn't lift weights until he was 30. Jordan didn't lift weights until 91.
And that's why he's a bitch.
That's not why he's a bitch. It's why he beat Detroit. Also, baseball.
Oh, my God. I feel Tim's energy to murder Michael.
Hold on. All right.
That's why.
All right.
That's why.
Wait, Tim.
Yeah. Go
Tim,
ahead,
last word. Yeah. Finish him off, please.
No, go for it. Go for it. You get
no. That's you, man. I just forgot that I turned you guys against each other like that. And I feel bad.
Honestly, my last word on it is like it's not bad to be clearly the second best player in the history of the game. Why do you have to say that he would beat Mike? He wouldn't beat him. He wouldn't beat him. He's awesome. He has some of the most gifts ever. Blah 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 blah. But adjusted to eras, it's an impossible argument. You can't make it. Everything's done in absolute zero. I think if you actually want to look at it, you have to look at what he did to an era. Jordan played for a long time, and he did that to an era. He decimated their legacies. A lot of players that are concurrent with LeBron, they have nice legacies. They had some nice legacies in that run. There's some 15 years of players with some nice legacies. Jordan? Nope. Just Hakeem. That's it. 2 years he didn't play. Just Hakeem. That's it.
And people don't even like to talk about Hakeem. People get mad when you say Hakeem's
good. Yeah. But again, like
Hakeem has actually like is.
But do you think if you put LeBron, if you just did like a Freaky Friday situation and you dropped LeBron into the Bulls in 1987, that he doesn't win the exact same amount of titles?
Is so LeBron Jamie Lee
Curtis? They
perform
worse
in this Freaky Friday?
As long as he's got a pass to Jim Corzine, he ain't winning shit in 87.
Right. Well, starting in like basically 90. Like,
well, is it you? So do you take away sports science and weightlifting? Do you thin his body out?
Move the
science. Do you thin his body out?
Like,
and then,
I think you have a very strong argument, but I think the more times you say sports science, the more it weakens the argument.
I don't think so.
I love it.
So you have
I love science more now.
First off, he doesn't load manage. So you have all that many more miles on his body. He's getting his head taken off by Detroit, by Philly, by Boston. Anytime he goes out west, they're running him ragged. Like he
but
has to
does
play defense.
He get his head taken off. He's again, yeah, I mean, again, like, LeBron, he is like gigantic
like, tape,
compared
man.
To
LeBron
the players in that era.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is. No. He's 6'10", 300 pounds. He's bigger and stronger
you
than
keep
all
saying,
those eight players.
There are less.
Why do you keep saying 6'10"?
Wait,
he's listed at 6'8", but he's actually 6'10".
So there are no centers back then. So we're taking all the centers out of that era. We're taking Lambeer out. We're taking Rick Mahorn out. We're
Lambeer is like maybe 7 feet, but like 215 pounds. LeBron is so much bigger and stronger than all those
LeBron
dudes.
James is 7 feet 18 inches.
Yes, so, thank you, Jamel.
So they
5,000 pounds.
So you're saying that they would look at him and they'd be like, "Wow, the way that we play the game is no easy layups. If he gets in the air, we take him out. We cut his legs out from under him. The flagrant fouls don't exist." But they take one look at LeBron and they go, "But don't do it to him."
Yes, that's exactly
what
I'm
saying. No, they wouldn't do that. They'd fucking take him out. What the fuck? Everything is this like...
I'm not saying they don't go at him. I'm just saying like...
They go at him. They go at him for 82 games. He doesn't get 15 games off because of his back or because he's pissed at his GM.
Ooh.
And he doesn't get to do that for 12 years. He has to play those 15 games for 12 more years. And he gets attacked, and no one calls a flagrant, and no one, and he doesn't get to put his shoulder down into someone, because if he does, they grab the top of his head and they slam him to the ground, because that's what they did if you lost your momentum. Is,
what if all of this violence on the floor turns LeBron into like a killer maniac, literally?
That
a serial
is also
killer
true.
Who actually
if he can
people.
Dish it back out
now,
like,
yeah, now
everyone
maybe,
would die.
But that also takes a toll on your body. If you're approaching the game that way, that then so you're saying then he becomes
defensively.
I'm not
even talking about play. I'm talking about LeBron James turning into Dexter and serial killing niggas in the street.
Okay, yeah, like, what? You know, okay,
seasons
so,
1 through 4, Dexter.
Michael Jordan,
yes.
In the 90s versus LeBron James with a gun in the 90s. Who's the better player?
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. If LeBron James gets to shoot people on the court, is he better than Jordan?
Wait, this is what's that Adam Sandler Damon Wayans movie?
Oh, I know
oh,
what you're talking about.
Last Boy Scout.
Last Boy Scout
is incredible.
Yeah. Last Boy Scout style. Yeah, then he wins. But I don't want to keep that metaphor going because then he turns the
all right,
gun
well,
on himself.
Yeah, then it's settled. LeBron with a gun.
I think
the GOAT.
Like I think it's unknowable. It's unknowable, man. All that's why 6-0 versus 3-5 in the finals is such a big thing.
I know that you have deserved blinders on, as I do for LeBron. seeing him grow up, like I can acknowledge bias mind myself. And with you, which is fine. That's because like you should be like you like if you were honestly if you didn't rep this hard, then like you're probably a sociopath to not like to experience all of that in the 90s and not like ride like this. So I respect the approach.
Yeah.
I am curious though, as an adult with The Last Dance and the kind of subsequent Jordan, criticism and kind of his own kind of writing his own doc. Did that kind of taint any of the kind of ride or die mentality you have for him or that team at all? Or did it shine any different kind of perspective on it? And I'm not saying this to like, I'm just curious if like that aspect of it as like an adult or kind of seeing it through this lens has like a more penetrable effect on kind of his humanity more so than kind of like how they brushed over like the food poisoning or
yeah, that's a great point.
Gambling and stuff.
And
I'm just kind of curious.
And again,
about that
yeah, because it skipped over a lot of stuff. It doesn't talk about Craig Hodges. It doesn't talk about like people that saved certain series, like Paxson gets the only shine, and Kerr gets a little bit because he's a figure, but Bobby Hansen doesn't get any love, like there were key figures like Rodman played his ass off and kind of saved the 96 finals. They don't talk about Sean Kemp at all and how good he was and how Rodman like finally showing up for a couple games, like saved that series. So there's like, but really look, Jordan's ego is 10 episodes big. For The Last Dance. We need 10 more episodes without that to cover either the same stuff or the storylines that got dropped. But here's one of the criticisms that people are coming away with from Jordan. If they weren't like, because Jordan was omnipresent in Chicago media. So if you grew up with that, you knew this about his personality. Like, it's not a shock to me that over 10 episodes, he still keeps the control of that. And that I'm not coming away from it thinking like, well, that shows me a different part of his personality. I already knew that, but he went 6-0. So, but you're like, yeah, I get that. That's part of his personality. Does that have effect on a younger generation of people, a generation of sports fans and athletes? Yeah, I think it did. I think there's a reason that the era after him sucked. Everyone was trying to be the man like that. There's a reason why LeBron is the player that he is and has achieved the icon status that he has, because he hasn't followed that trend. And I respect that, and I've never been a LeBron hater.
Not a hater. He's just keeping it real. Tim, I'm with you. These millennial ass, these fools, these dudes, they don't get it, man.
But your point, like your question is, that's a great question. Like how does it change what you think about it? I think for a lot of Chicago fans that know a lot about Jordan, you're like, no, I mean, obviously, You know what I don't want to see? And I tweeted about this when that this string of commercials came out of like ESPN's next documentary series coming out, that Lance Armstrong one. That's one to me where I'm like,
no, thank you.
He's already had the narrative this whole time. He had the narrative when he was lying about cheating. Then he grabbed the narrative again to say like, here's why I cheated. And this next one's going to be like, yes, I cheated, but I cheated better than everyone and I was still the best. It's like, I don't fucking need that. Like with Jordan, mm-hmm. the narrative has never really changed. He's always been like, yeah, I'm a sociopath when it comes to winning. Nobody wants it more than me.
And he may have gambled on games he played in, but he didn't cheat to win.
I don't know if he ever gambled on. I don't know. The Pete Rose thing was too big. I don't think he did.
No, yeah, I don't think so either. I was just playing around. Oh, okay. But yeah, it is interesting that like Lance Armstrong and Tom Brady are the two next big doc subjects, and they're literal cheaters. So
Tom Brady is too.
Tom Brady is getting a 10-part doc too. Yeah.
No.
Oh. While he's still in the league, that's OD.
It is weird.
The Bruce Lee one looks amazing.
Nobody wanted it. He's boring.
The Bruce Lee documentary looks incredible.
Yeah, that actually looks.
Wait, I can't wait. I still haven't gotten to these stats.
Oh, drop some
here. All right.
Yeah, give us stats. Let's go. All
right. So that like his second year in the league is kind of a lost year, right? But if you look at 37.1 a game in his third season and 35.3 a game in his fourth season. If you go for his like per 36 numbers, just like those raw numbers in that second year, so you take his 14 minute time restriction, you just put it up to like what his average would be. And obviously like he got injured, and part of getting over that injury is what makes him come back, score 63 on the playoffs against Boston, go for 37 a game that following year. But still, you end up like he would have had a season in between. If he'd had a normal second year in the league, he would have had a season in between the 37-point year and the 35-point year. So we basically missed a 36-point-per-game season from Jordan. and then, you know, 2 years after that is the year that he gets Defensive Player of the Year, MVP of the All-Star Game. A lot of those things adjusted for average they're nuts. And he's playing 82 games. He's playing 82 games a year. It's at a time when he has less sports science, medicine, training.
There it is.
To protect
sports
it.
Science.
And restaurants are worse. They don't know shit about how to work with, aioli yet.
I think Pippen, Kukoc, Longley, those are the guys in order that deserved a little bit more shine in it.
Longley was one of the worst ones because they just was like, oh, Longley casually sent this finals game to overtime.
Yeah.
You're like, really? They're not going to just like even say who it was?
What happened between Mike and Luke Longley?
Yeah, who knows, man?
What happened on their trip to Australia?
You know, I think it's more about what didn't happen. Like, it took Steve Kerr punching Michael Jordan in the face for him to acknowledge that he exists. Like, I think Luke Longley...
And Tony had to survive a civil war.
Yeah.
So those were pretty big. Yeah.
Luke Longley just didn't do enough to be a person to Michael Jordan.
I think that second three-peat, too, Kerr talks about how Jordan just wasn't close to any of the guys on the second three-peat because he was so big that he needed security detail and to be protected. And he lived in a little bubble in that last 3 years with the Bulls. What you don't want to get me into is the Wizards years. Cause I've gotten to the saddest point where I'm looking at like the healthy games in that first season. And then the games with Rip Hamilton. And I'm like, oh my God, they would have been the second seed in the East.
I think Jordan going to the Wizards like is the reason why my life is in shambles. I don't think he should have come.
Yeah, I agree. Of course. Also, like
we all agree that your life is in shambles, Jamel.
Yeah, no one is disagreeing with you that.
Yeah, nobody stopped me and said things are fine. Y'all know my shit is fucked up right now. And I think I can trace it back to when he had to play with goddamn fucking Popeye Jones.
He played with Popeye Jones. Popeye Jones is a real fucking player.
Let me ask you guys this. Is there I know you probably covered it already in last week's, but is there anything else that kind of that you were like, oh, why didn't they talk more about that? For me, it was let Harper talk more, get more from Harper, and give Kukoc way more love. You talk about a guy who would be great, near dominant in this era. Kukoc is a guy whose prime was robbed because he wanted to actually stay closer to home during the Civil War. The Civil War was happening. He was like, I should be nearby.
That it just felt like the competitiveness of Jordan, like as like a person and an athlete, suppressed the best parts of what this documentary should have been, like the Kukoc and stuff like that. Also, I understand that he hates Jerry Krause, and that's all well and good. And like, we all hate Jerry Krause now because Michael tells us to. But like, Jerry Krause deserves like a tiny bit of shine for putting together and like drafting the people that he did and making the trade. So like, it was just this kind of like absolutism of like getting inside of Jordan's head vis-a-vis like watching the doc that did feel like a little unnecessarily dirty to me in hindsight. When I was in it, I was loving every second of it. But like, as we get further away from it too, it's just like, you know, I'm not going to argue with 6-0, but there is just something about this where like, man, this stuff doesn't age well in anybody. Yep. In terms of someone also kind of setting a narrative for all this too.
And that's a dangerous precedent for ESPN too, because I think
they
used to have great stuff. The 30 for 30s were awesome, but if the condition to get this footage and to tell this story is narrative control by the protagonist or antagonist,
propaganda,
story, it disappears from their original intent with 30 for 30, which already could be improved upon. Yeah, it's a bummer because some of these are going to be like event television, and then people that don't know any better are going to be like, that's what a documentary is. And like, no, it's not.
I think they should actually just do a doc on the 2 years he's gone. Let's get real. Let's get into it. Let's make Vernon Maxwell the protagonist for a fucking change.
I do want to say shout out to Vernon Maxwell and all the other players who like have responded to The Last Dance by being like, fuck Jordan. Like, I'm finally coming out and saying it. Like, this guy was a piece of shit. Robert Parrish also was like, you know, I think like overlooked member of the 97 team, right?
I mean, they didn't mention him or John Sally. He had a bunch of dudes that he beat on that second three-peat.
Yep. Yeah, but yeah, Robert Parrish told the story after the last episode aired where he was just like, yeah, Michael Jordan like tried to bully me and fight me in a practice once, and I told him, fucking do it, bitch. And then he left me alone. And he was like, he said, I think the quote was like, I've been around, I've got rings, I'm not enamored with you like these other idiots. Fucking do it. And then like Michael Jordan left him alone.
He's Jordan kind of takes it further than everything else. And he learned in that 80s era too, you know? Like, I think that part of it is his, like, the makeup of his character, you know, the guy who's that competitive and who has the will to win and the dedication and work ethic. But also, like, you put the Pistons in front of him and he has to ramp that up to 11 in order to get over the top. And then he can't think of any other way to do it. And then he takes 2 years off and comes back and is like, now I have to ramp it up, crank it up even more to win. And he's isolated on that team. He doesn't know anyone. He's like, the equation of it all makes sense. And I think the equation is also like, it's overlooked and a lot of criticism hasn't been sent his way because of 6-0. Like, that 6-0 does a lot to mute these conversations. And in a weird way, now The Last Dance has like reopened some of these conversations where it both shows his greatness, but his narrative control, like, you could make the argument that if he hadn't had control, he would come off looking better. If there were people trashing him, then you would have more empathy for him. And you'd be like,
absolutely.
Buddy, you're 6-0.
I agree. 100%. I agree with that. It would give a fuller picture of the man.
Yes.
Yep. But that isn't that weird?
His biggest mistake.
Isn't that weird that like his own worst enemy, his own worst enemy helped him go 6-0? Like, being his own worst enemy helped him do that. And so he never learned the lesson. Like, he's like a guy who, like, if he comes back for 99, if Jordan had been beaten, finally taken off the pedestal with the Bulls, with one of those big teams, would he have changed? Would his legacy be different? Would his attitude be different? Would he finally be able to say, like, yo, they took me out, good for them?
His attitude is also totally in alignment of like the same way where he's like, I don't have a gambling problem because I never run out of money. It's like, yeah, dude, because like there's like a constant FedEx box of cash being dropped off from Nike every like 3 weeks. Like, that doesn't mean you don't have a gambling problem. It just means that like it's never been consequential to you.
Yeah. It's also similar to like how he just was like, Gary Payton, one of the greatest defenders of all time, like one of like who won Defensive Player of the Year that year, who like when I played him in the finals and he was my primary defender, like my stats went way down. Yeah. I didn't give a shit about Gary Payton. My dad died. And you're just like, oh, well, like, how do you fucking argue against that? Like, it's clear that Gary Payton affected your game, but you can't like argue against someone and be like, my dad died, you know? Like, like the greatest defender of all time took your stats down, but you can't admit that. You need to find this other excuse.
Hakeem is the greatest defender of all time. Next question. Okay. 99. Who would have won? First off, if Jordan comes back, is there no strike? Who wins? Is it New York? Is it Indiana? Is it San Antonio? Anyway, these are your three options, gentlemen. Now go.
Who's going first? I'll go first.
Yeah, let's. Let Tim close it out. I'm gonna go first. I'm gonna say, if the Bulls get it all back together, then yes, they have a legit shot at winning. Although I do think Dennis Rodman was like seriously over the hill already in 98. So like, I don't know if he's as much of a factor coming back, but it's the Bulls or the Spurs. I think the Bulls take it 60% over the Spurs 40.
I think the Pacers take it because the Bulls at that point would just have been vulnerable enough for the reasons you said. Also, Scottie's really coming, starting to come down to earth. And they kind of were that team, that like that older team who's going to like pass the buck to the younger team. And I feel like the Pacers kind of would have had that focus of like, all we have to focus on is working our ass off for every single moment to beat this team. Like the same montage, just like swapping the jerseys. So I would have gone, I think that definitely would have. I would go with the Pacers.
I mean, blend of both, because I think that the aura of invincibility, maybe they upgrade Rodman that offseason, but the 50-game sprint, like the fact that they could have like limped to the playoffs and just focused their attention, I still think like heavyweights, they just would have been like, okay, we need one knockout punch for Indiana and we need one knockout punch for whoever comes out of the West. I think it probably would have been Spurs, Bulls, and I would have leaned Bulls. But again, you don't know. I didn't think that way before this, to be honest. I was like, thank God they didn't come back in 99. That was my thought before this. I kind of have been talked into, well, I don't know, never underestimate a champion. But I don't know. I'm glad they didn't.
I'm saying the Knicks win. The Knicks win it all over the Spurs anyway. Jeff Van Gundy ascends to heaven immediately after the final whistle blows.
I think the Bulls would have had a tough time with Duncan and Robinson.
Hell yeah, because they never had two bigs that was like that.
Yeah.
And especially not if Rodman's on WCW Nitro.
Oh, God. That was like reliving that. I think the documentary like makes it positive, and it was almost all negative back then. You're like,
right. I think
it was
the craziest part is that Jordan like doesn't seem to care. He's making a joke of it. And then you remember like, oh, Jordan is like getting hammered every night and showing up to practice hungover. Like he literally can't be mad at Dennis Rodman for what he did. Cause it's like, he's doing very similar shit. Right.
Yeah. And that was part of the circus, and Jordan could let it happen because he wasn't really part of the team. He was just the satellite outside of the team.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Like, and he just was kind of...
Yeah, so he's like, it affected everyone else more. It affected the organization. Like, the media hated Rodman. The media was like, this guy's a clown. This is a sideshow. he was a huge part of it being like such a circus for the whole like three-peat. They used to, did you know the story that they used to pay Rodman to not shower when they played against teams with like really good power forwards or guys that Rodman would defend? Yeah, they'd so pay for him to
fucking stunk to like pay, bother the other guy.
They'd be like, we're gonna don't shower, we're gonna put you in a separate mode of transportation apart from the team, just show up and stink against like this player.
I mean, show up and stink
funking is Larry Johnson out of the gym. Yeah,
show up and stink is like my basketball strategy anyways.
That's fair. That's super fair,
guys. We have we thought this was going to be a podcast about Chicago PD. It ended up being about The Last Dance again.
Something wait, totally different.
I gotta tell you,
no,
I gotta give you the Chicago PD story.
Okay, let's wrap this up with a Chicago PD story.
All right, so they
hold on, bang, boom, Tim, you know what I'm saying? Add some sort of do or die song over the put Po Pimp over this part right here. About 12 seconds of Po Pimp right
Tim
here.
Tim is also the name of our editor.
Yeah,
too.
Tim is our editor, not just our guest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I forgot there's two. Yeah, I forgot there's two Tims. Hey, Tim, both Tims. I love you both. Something very important has happened to me this quarantine. I have been bonding with my family, particularly my dad, and I found out that we both love Chicago PD. As you gentlemen both know, huge PD head. I'm all about it. And you know who else? You know who I found out last week loves the show as well? My patron saint of turntness, John Wall. He was on All the Smoke, and they were like, "What are you watching?" And he said Chicago PD in front of everybody.
And I love that this has given you the courage to like admit it, because I feel like listeners know that you're a big like procedural fan, but
this is me.
You've never been a public like Chicago universe fan. You love Chicago PD. You love Chicago Medical.
I don't love Chicago Med. Take that back. Sorry. I love Chicago Fire. And I love Chicago PD, okay? And I did watch Chicago Justice, but some of them episodes was trash. Anytime they try to do like a Law and Order style thing and it's about like just some rich kid getting killed because they, you know what I'm saying, it was like going to a mountain or some shit, like that's weak, okay? Don't do that.
Yeah, give you crimes, give you arson, and that's all you want. Yeah.
Give me the work, okay?
Okay.
Just clear out the lane.
So Jamel has teed you up, Tim. Tell us your Chicago PD story.
So this is the first episode of TV that I ever filmed. This was the first episode of TV that I ever booked in the room. I booked Veep, but it was in this weird back doorway, and then we filmed it after Chicago PD. So I get outfitted. It's like 10 degrees below zero. We're out there in our like officer uniforms. The main dude, Hank, rolls up. It's a Monday morning. And dude, this guy sounds like he's been out all weekend. And they're like, his name's Jason. I forget his last name.
Big Gay.
Yeah, yeah.
The God.
So they're like, they all call him Jay. And they're like, Jay, how you doing, man? Pretty early on a Monday. And he's like, yeah, pretty good. So they had all these consultants on the show that were Chicago police officers. And he's like, yeah, I went out with blah, 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 you know, like we hit it pretty hard this weekend. And like all these like actual Chicago police, like police officers who were just standing there, just like jacked, no jacket on, 10 below zero. They're like, yeah, we took Jay out. We got him fucked up real good. And I'm sitting there and there's these four Hispanic extras that have all been executed in this park, you know? And so they're all sitting there freezing their asses off, covered in fake blood, looking up at us like, can we fucking get going? And these cops and Jason are just like joking around about getting fucked up. That was the first day. And then the second day we filmed all these, I probably had like two or three other scenes that got cut. And they got cut because LaRoyce Hawkins was kind of like the fifth, sixth guy down on the team. And I watched the first three seasons. I loved the show too. It was like a bit of Chicago because I had just moved to LA after I filmed that episode. So I was like, oh, I'll watch Chicago PD. It becomes my thing. Like reminds me of home, even though it's not a great representation of Chicago. It's just crime.
This is all like Hispanic dudes getting murdered in a park.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
reminds me of home.
Yeah, for the most part. And then just like some shoddy police work, some people getting thrown in cages.
Yeah.
You know, they get a little loose.
A little loose. So we film these scenes and then I you know, like I watched the episode's the ninth episode of season one. And as I've been watching season one, I realized that like LaRoyce's character is kind of, they had set up this side gig for him, and I was part of the side gig. I was a like a officer that's like, hey man, I don't approve of that. I'm a Christian cop.
Which I remember this storyline because he was like running a club. He was like a club promoter.
Oh my God. And the director, while they were filming it, the director's like laughing at the stuff that I'm doing. So I think like none of it has aired, you know. NBC hasn't said, hey, this is clearly the direction of the show. So I think there were some mixed signals and they thought like, maybe it could get funny every once in a while. So we'll put this blonde dude in as a cop, as a Christian cop. And the director's like, you know, he's laughing at shit. And he's like, that's great. That's great. And then the episode comes out and like half the stuff has been cut. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then I realized they've slowly been cutting poor LaRoyce's storyline throughout all of season one. And then he gets built up in later seasons. But that first season, like his C, he was the C storyline in most episodes, and they just fucking cut all of it out.
Hell, dude, oh, I remember early Chicago PD, they did try to, because Amy Morton, the fucking mom from like Rookie of the Year,
yeah, is funny. I saw her, and dude, I smoked a cigarette with her after seeing her in August Osage on Broadway.
Whoa,
yeah, she's funny.
Great in that,
dude.
Yeah,
she's like the only funny thing on Chicago PD, but like, they would try to lean on that, like it was like her and the hot brunette one. What's her name? Burgess.
Yeah, Burgess.
They would always have them be funny.
Yep. Yeah, it was wild to see that and be like, oh man, these people are
damn,
They're working like 8-10 months out of the year down there. And then when we did Shrink, we went back and filmed Shrink for CISO, and now it lives on the NBC app. Obviously, maybe Peacock at some point. Who knows? Not germane to any of this, but. When NBC was like, we're going to put it on our app, I went to someone at NBC and I was like, hey, can we cut a promo that makes it look like Shrink is part of the Dick Wolf universe?
Yeah.
And just blend Fire PD Med and blend Shrink. All of them and Chicago Shrink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
Chicago
blend
Shrink
it all in,
sick,
but
dude.
Like us being all like, you know, tongue in cheek. And dorky, man, and they're like,
it's crazy how they could just change a show like that. Like,
they're like,
it was supposed to be funny, and now it's just Hank Voigt killing suspect.
Yep. And people being like, I'm not okay with this, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah,
Tim, did you make the choice? Like, were you specifically like, when we shoot Shrink, we have to go to Chicago?
Yeah, because we had done it as an improvised web series in 2011, and then we turned it into a pilot in 2012. We won a couple awards at the New York Television Festival that year, and then we pitched it in 2013. We sold it to Pivot, which doesn't exist anymore. It sat in development there for 2.5 years because they loved it, but
they pivoted out of money.
Yep, exactly. And then the head of Pivot and his main creative, like in Scripted, ended up at CISO. I had just done a couple seasons of Bajillion-Dollar Properties, and they were like, hey, just come here. It's basically a green light. Just come in and pitch it. And we just joked around for 45 minutes, and our main EP, this Scottish guy, Patrick Daly, who was like the patron saint of that show, he was like, I got a writer's room. We're doing this. And they're like, what? He's like, people are on planes. It's happening. They're like, okay, 8 episodes. And then we just like did it. It's like we stole it. And we went back to Chicago, and that was the condition. It was like, it's got to be in Chicago. That's the tone that we want. It was a huge learning experience. Ton of obstacles overcome, but at the end of the day, sometimes you only get one shot, and we took it. Got to do it in Chicago. I hope there's some editor out there that someday just takes it and does it on their own, puts it into the Dick Wolf universe. That really cracked me up.
If any of our Patreons are editing freaks, hook that up. Benner might do it.
I mean,
Benner could do
look,
it.
Look, I am a trained editor, but I'm probably not going to do it, Tim. I'm sorry. but here's the thing. I remember like the day Shrink came out, because like I saw someone post about it, and it ruined a pilot I was writing. Where I had a pilot with like a similar premise, where like it was a con artist woman who was like trying to like get her therapy hours up. It just was like too similar. But my dream was to shoot it in Philadelphia.
Oh, nice.
But just similarly, like, because, like, to me, the setting, yeah, was a big part of the show. But yeah, so congratulations on getting to shoot something in Chicago. That's my dream, but with Philadelphia.
I hear you. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, anything else before we want to wrap this up? This has been a fucking bonus-sized episode, guys.
Yo, listen, the heart wants what the heart wants, and that's just to argue MJ and LeBron for like 45 minutes to an hour on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Hey, you bring me back on someday to talk about Pippen, because I do think that he's...
What are you doing Wednesday? You want?
Yeah, I was about to say Wednesday, Sunday, next Wednesday.
Yeah, let me go down some stat holes with Pippen, because I think it's super hard to put Pippen into historical context, and I think he gets diminished because of that, which is a shame.
Oh yeah, he literally could have been the MVP any season that he was also playing with Jordan. Like, he is so good. And he just gets diminished as a second banana.
Who I think his current comp is? Draymond Green and Klay Thompson.
Yes. Ooh,
he's that kind of shooter?
No, he's not that kind of shooter. You give him, he's a bit more Dre than Klay, but like, obviously all of those shooters now would shoot way more three-pointers and would have higher percentages.
I think Scottie Pippen today would be as good of a shooter as Klay Thompson is.
Just that level of catch and shoot can do it.
Defensively. Yeah, and probably almost, to be honest, compare Scottie more to LeBron's physical attributes than Michael, I feel like.
Yeah, in terms of
that's what I always said. I always say it's like he's Pippen and Jordan, but in a weird, like, it's a mix of, like, it's Pippen's brain. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Here's a question for the next time you're on, Tim, and we'll explore it then, but I'm just teasing it now. If Scottie Pippen did not grow up in poverty, would he have been better than Michael Jordan?
Oh man.
Socioeconomics
and also just self-perception and confidence. I think a lot of problems with Scottie Pippen's career is a weird lack of confidence with how good he actually was.
Because he grew up in the mud.
He accepted fucking no money because he grew up in the mud.
I grew up in Joliet. This hits too close to home. All right,
we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it Wednesday.
Yeah,
Tim, where can we find you online? Let our listeners know.
Let me check Twitter. I think I'm Tim_Baltz and Instagram Tim.Baltz. I don't know. Figure it out. Yeah, right. That's right.
And,
that's right.
What's your address?
You got time.
Your home address is what?
Hey, you guys know. All right. I'm at 69420 Fun Lane.
Hey. No way. Hey. I didn't know we live in the same building. Yeah, that's so funny.
Free street, the parking is free over there. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm apartment 4.
Yep. I'm apartment
187-3.
It's a dick and balls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Jamel's in 80085.
Guys, go to jameljohnson.com, find Friend or Foe, Jamel's special. It is very good, and it is exactly what we need right now in quarantine. It is a special he shot with no audience. Very funny stuff. Go to @DangerMoses on Twitter and on Instagram, right? Or no? What's your
sure.
Yeah. For Peter, I will not promote myself at all. It is
because it's his birthday.
Happy birthday.
Go to Benner's house and smack him in the fucking face. Happy birthday, nigga.
Thank you. All right, let's get out of here. Love you guys. Bye.